allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, and liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Karen Armstrong.
Here.
Kathy Buckley.
Here.
Leonard King.
Here.
Stan Karofsky.
Here.
Richard Levine.
Here.
Ed Marin.
Here.
Carol Race. Pauline Stone. Steve Trombley.
Here.
Charles Simpson.
Under C, result the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve the agenda. I have a couple changes. You have an additional CSC recommendations in front of you. And you just stay on second here so you can write this down. Page 4 of your agenda under C. The figure, the re-levy amount is going to be in the amount of $972,624.15. And that the date that needs to return to Clinton County by is 11-15-11.
Make a motion to approve changes.
Motion by Richard.
Second.
Could I?
Darren.
Check.
Yeah,
quickly.
Yep.
Tonight we have, I don't know if it's on the agenda, we would probably be policies.
Under policy, yep.
Okay, could we have those also taken off? The audit committee didn't get a chance to get to those, and we would like to since they are part of our category.
The policy, you want to wait on those?
Yes, I'd like to wait on those because we didn't get a chance to do this tonight.
All of them, Stan, or just certain ones?
Just the ones to budget.
It's 610. The 6110R and
610 and then the regulation?
And the regulation. So we want planning and regulations.
Yes. Just those. Yeah. We'd like to have a chance to.
Okay, that's those. For the audit committee requesting that. We'll take those on. Is that okay with you? Any other changes? Richard, are you still set with your motion?
Yes.
Karen?
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. We have 5 minutes for public comment. Anybody would like to address the board at this time?
Yes. I would. My name is Holly Sims. Thank you for allowing me to address the board. The budget season will be upon us before we know it. With that task will come some tough decisions. As you work through the budget process, please include the input from the district residents. Please remember that the reason we are all here is to provide a sound education for the students while remaining fiscally responsible to the taxpayers. Leave no stone unturned when looking for efficiencies. For example, school officials should look closely at class schedules to see if efficiencies can be gained. We foiled the high school schedules for last year and for this school year. We had questions and concerns about the schedules, so we met with Mr. Amo to be sure we were reading them correctly. He assured us we were reading them correctly, that classes in question were not special ed classes, and that the numbers were accurate within 1 to 2 students. Here's an example of one of several classes that concerned us. Algebra prep. Section 1, 2 students. Section 2, 3 students. Section 3, 3 students. Section 4, 3 students. Section 5, 2 students. Section 6, 1 student. Section 7, 2 students. Section 8, 1 student. Section 9, 2 students. Section 10 and 11 did not have students. And Section 12 had 2 students. The biggest algebra prep class had 3 students. A total of 21 students were spread out over 10 class sections. In fact, one teacher's entire class load was to teach 16 of those students, 8 on one day and 8 students on the next. Do you think that's the best use of our resources? This scenario repeated itself with several other classes having multiple sections with low enrollment. These classes were not special ed classes. Mr. Amos said the reason for so many sections was they were trying to accommodate families. At a time when we need to find efficiencies, please start by looking at class schedules. It saddens me to think that elementary music classes were cut this year when gross inefficiencies such as this exist elsewhere, and it makes me wonder what other waste is occurring in our district. The job of the Board of Education, administration, and faculty is to serve the needs of our kids. It is time to tighten our belts, and I know it is tempting to just eliminate entire programs, because that is surely the easiest way to find savings. But that is not in the best interest of our kids. Cutting programs like music, AP, TAP, and extracurricular activities should occur only as a last resort. Cutting programs for kids should only occur when and if you have exhausted all other avenues. Your first obligation is to the children of this district. Your second obligation is to the taxpayers. Please be mindful of that as you proceed with the budget process. Thank you.
So we have about a minute and a half left if somebody else would like to address the board.
I would. Okay. Debbie Passo. I've done my fair share of complaining, and I feel the things I've said in past meetings have been warranted, and I'm still going to be vocal about things when need be, but I would like to say that I'm really, really pleased to see what you've done on the website, and including an area where the public can give some input about the upcoming budget process. And I'm really hoping that that's not just a Band-Aid or lip service so that we feel like you're listening. I really hope this is a genuine attempt on your part to hear what the district residents have to say, because that's why you are there, to listen to the district residents. And I'm really grateful for that. So a lot of good comments are appearing on there, folks. I hope you're reading and that you'll take them into account. Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to presentations.
Yep, several good news items.
Jumping ahead.
Well, why don't you mind introducing us?
Yes.
We're back. Oh, Lynn.
Lynn Darcy is our internal claims auditor, and she reports to the board once a year for an update. She reports to the audit committee quarterly. And Lynn is back here. She's been with us for 6 years, and I'll just turn the floor over to her.
Hi, I'm Lynn Darcy. I think everybody on the board was on the board last year, so you know me. People that are in the audience might not. I come once a year to meet with you guys, and if there's any questions that you have, I'm available. I have on the computer, I contact the audit committee every month with a monthly report after I do the claims audit, which means I audit all the claims, everything that's paid. It gets my initial on it. The checks before they're sent out get my initial. So that makes sure that the money's going to the right person and that it's the right amount and that there's no problem with the claim. Then every 3 months I meet with the audit committee. So does anybody have any questions about audit and claims auditing? No, we're doing a lot better than in the last 6 years. There's been a lot of improvement. There's training so that I am kept up to date with things that I need to start be looking for. And other than that, I really don't have anything else to say. I just come and let you guys ask me questions if you need to.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Mr. Remo?
Yeah, I do apologize for being a little slow. I appreciate that. Thank you.
A number of items. Charles will be covering some of the activities associated with our students in a few minutes on his report. But I did want to point out that Mr. Hal Gold, who is a representative from Cisco Food Services, which is our major grocery supplier, has donated 8 turkeys to otherwise needy families for their holidays. Mrs. Barnes and the school counselors were happy to assist in the with the generous offer, and of course, we'll do a formal thank you to Mr. Gold for his generosity. Good news there. You may have seen the article in the Press Republican, I think on Monday, which featured the high school clothing drive that's organized through the Students Against Destructive Decisions, or SAD Club. Clothing donations, bins rather, have been decorated and placed in the main offices of all of our schools, and the club is hopeful the school community will make donations of much needed clothing, including winter coats, mittens, boots, ski pants, those types of items. On Sunday, November 20th, grocery bags will be sold for $1 to anyone wishing to fill their bags with any of these donated items. And of course, the money that's going to be raised by the club will be used to benefit other issues, such as seatbelt and bicycle safety efforts. So particular congratulations to advisor Jennifer Duffy and the SAD club advisor Sean Coe and vice president Chelsea Benway for this creative approach of service to the community.
Very good.
As briefly been mentioned, we do have a new website link. The district did launch a new listing on the website to enlist ideas, suggestions, and recommendations from the community and district staff alike for future budget considerations. You can find this under the Of Interest prompt. If you go to the website, you'll find a section called Of Interest, and you'll click down through the prompt and you will find contributions are being listed under the category of budget containment and reduction ideas. I've written a short introductory statement relative to the purpose of the site, and courtesy of Mr. Lambert, who developed a form for the submission of ideas, the ideas are coming in. And we update regularly, collect them and put them on the site. Contributors will be able to see the submissions in total and can remain anonymous, or if they so choose, identify how they might be contacted. There's a way to do that by saying yes or no, you'd like to be contacted. It takes you to another drop-down menu of how you can be reached. Many of the suggestions and ideas have been shared already, and certainly they remain welcome for those who wish to participate. So we thank you for that. Also on the website, property tax cap information. We have a very thorough brochure that has been published, also found under the Of Interest section of the website on property tax cap. The brochure was published by Questar 3, which is one of our neighboring BOCES offices, and they did an excellent job, in my opinion, describing the information and providing the answers to some of the more prevailing questions that come with the imposing tax cap issue. So anybody in the community who want to go to the website, click on that particular brochure and see if it helps with questions that you might have. NISBA, New York State School Board Association, Winter Law Conference. It will be offered, offered regional workshops beginning in December on the same topic, which is solving the school budget puzzle, tax levy limits, and the challenges ahead. And that's identified for school board members. The meeting on December 9th, if that's of interest of any of the board members for that particular meeting, will be held in Albany. And I can get you more information on that as well. And finally, another NISBA meeting on November 3rd. Board members Pauline Stone, Mr. King, and I attended the School Boards Association meeting held in Peru. The featured presenters were from the law firm of Harris Beach. 3 major presentations as part of the evening. APPR, or Annual Professional Performance Review, What's Next?, which focused on the legal issues for districts and boards as they grapple with the new changes in state education law relative to evaluation of teachers and administrators. That, by the way, is required in all schools to be implemented in 2012-13. The second section focused on the special education overview, and that spoke to amendments to Part 200 regulations. And those, of course, are the regulations associated with special needs student services. In particular, that presentation focused on issues of an availability of technology available to special needs students. And it also covered regulations proposed to reduce special education costs. Although cryptically the presenter said that they are ideas being touted as cost-saving measures, but don't expect it, that you'll save any money at the district level when the regulations finally get churned up and work through SED. There isn't a lot of budget relief in that area. Maybe some changes in requirements, but no budget relief. Finally, the topic of bullying, cyberbullying, and DASA was discussed. DASA, of course, stands for the Dignity for All Students Act. And this was signed into law in 2010 and takes effect in 2012-13. The law requires districts to take several measures to protect students from bullying, including cyberbullying, which is a major portion of the evening's presentation. As an aside, our district has been very involved in working in committees to revise our current code of conduct on this subject area to reflect these changes, as well as working with the Safe Schools Coalition through BOCES to draft specific policy language that would be included both in the code of conduct as well as brought to the board for an official adoption on bullying and cyberbullying, etc. So with that lengthy list of information, I conclude my report.
Okay. No questions for anyone? Mary?
I have a few items. One thing is just to let the board know that Mr. Amo and I are investigating opportunities that may be available on our outstanding long-term debt with a potential refinancing or call option window that will be opening up within the next 5 to 6 months, and the possibility of refinancing it for a lower interest rate. Preliminary investigation indicates that potentially there is a savings of maybe half a percentage point. It would equate to possibly $30,000 to $40,000 a year savings in interest for the remaining term. Of course, there will be some cost to actually have that take effect, but we've asked for both the bond counsel that would be charging legal fees to write up the bond amendments for this, as well as fiscal advisors to pull together a prospectus, which is a packet of information that we generally pull every year together that can be sent out to the market to solicit bids for the refinancing of the debt. So just to let you know, on the radar screen, it's out there. Within the next 2 months, we hope to be able to bring something back to the board one way or another that we think it's worthwhile to go forward and what potential savings we might achieve from doing that. The other item that I wanted to complete, to update you on, is that we've completed recently the state aid claim forms for the 10-11 fiscal year, which the audit is not yet final, but we have completed the state aid claim forms. So those will be used. Our actual expenditures that were incurred last year will be used for the future forecast that the state pulls all the data for the legislative budget forecast that will come out in January, February first time, and then, or the governor's proposal, and then the legislative also. So that data's in there and will be used, so it's the most updated information we have. The other item I wanna bring up is that we've been struggling internally in the business office with what seems to be kind of a new issue that we've had to deal with this year more and more. And that's the facility use and the restrictions that are put on us by education law with what can be done within the facility and what can't be done within the facility, at least on a free basis. The restrictions of free public use of the school facilities during a contingency period. And I believe that's going to be brought up later under additional items to discuss, to just explore it and investigate what we have. The audit report has been delayed. The external auditor has met with the audit committee at the previous audit meeting, but we left the audit open, asking the auditor to give us a little more time because we were anticipating the trip to Albany. The trip to Albany, one of the projects that were being discussed, the emergency project, was the fuel line restoration project that was done in the fall of 2010, declared an emergency in the spring of 2010. We've received the guidance on the accounting transaction that needs to be posted. The aid is coming back, but we still need to do the accounting entry for it, and that's going to be included in this audit, so we've asked the auditor to hold that open so that we can get that in. I've actually reached out to him today and indicated that I would have that information to him this week, so I anticipate having some kind of a draft report to the full board within the next month on that. But I wanted to explain to you the delay is not because of our auditor, it's because I've asked him to leave it open rather than complete it and then open it back up and pay him to restate it. If the state gave us back the aid, I said, please just leave it open and give me the opportunity to give you one or two more entries for it. So okay. They're agreeable and we'll have that forthcoming.
So you have a question? Yeah.
The fuel line, that's emergency state aid?
That's Excel. The state agreed to let us use the Excel allocation aid for that, so it's separate from the $6.5 million capital project. It's not going to come back in the form of state emergency aid. That's a different type of building aid, but we had approximately $1.6 million allocation of Excel funds to the district. All schools got some kind of an allocation, and we're using a portion of that, approximately a million of that, we're using on the $6.5 million project, so that project would have no cost to the taxpayer. So the plan on the big project was approximately 84% comes back in regular building aid on the $6.5 million project. And the other 16%, we were using the Excel allocation. So of the 1.6, we were pulling a million over, so there'd be no cost to the taxpayer. It'd be fully supported by state aid. Then we had the fuel line emergency project that was declared in May of 2010. That during regular testing, it was discovered that the lines in the ground had some deterioration, and it had to be investigated and remediated, and nothing, there were actually no leaks, but there had to be some repairs and restoration done to the lines. The board declared an emergency. There was some misunderstanding at the time. We thought that it was going to be part of the $6.5 million project, and it was going to be emergency aid coming back from the state. None of that came to fruition, but we did get the state to agree to allow us to use Excel allocation aid for it. So once we have the final report filed on that, we'll file the reports with, I believe it's the dormitory authority, and they'll sell a bond, they'll collect reports from other districts throughout the state, and then collectively they sell a bond with the proceeds. They then send that Excel aid out to the schools. So I expect that we'll get the aid back on it, but it's not technically emergency aid, it's technically Excel allocation aid that will come back to us.
So, but because it has a category of emergency at some point.
Because the board declared it. It's a local emergency. There's two types of emergencies. It's a local emergency, but it's not a state emergency.
Okay. Well, I guess what I'm getting to is if does it fall into the category of it's at risk of not getting the aid if it doesn't get accomplished over a certain period of time, like we were concerned with the other one?
My personal opinion is yes, it needs to be completed in a very short time period here
because,
on out,
because that, was the
that we could jeopardize ourselves again.
So that's where I'm getting at. So this is a 2009 project,
2010
project. What is the timeline for completion so that we don't run the risk of not getting the aid back? And so we're going to have the same kind of urgency with all the emergency status projects. That's kind of a question for Mr. Hammond.
Is it done? 100% done?
What are we asking? We got two questions.
No, I think we're asking the same question. Is the fuel line project 100% complete?
Did you hear my question?
I did. I thought I did, but it wasn't about the fuel line being completed. But the question is on the aid. If a project is declared as an emergency and state education agrees and that it is an emergency, then there's an impending need to address it immediately.
Right. So we have emergency projects that are an emergency. We need to.
Exactly.
So this is from 2010, it's not finished yet. What is our status for getting it done so we make sure we get the aid?
Yeah, okay. We are getting the aid. The status of it getting done is that we're somewhere in the neighborhood. I hesitate to put a percentage on it, but it's everything but closeout is what I keep hearing from the architects. And closeout, I think we have a deadline. I think we projected a deadline as the end of the month, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have my minutes in front of me.
Rick Mandrell said that within 30 days, he was checking with the mechanical contractor, and it all should be closed out. And
the only kicker is because the
work being done to move by subcontractors. They can't guarantee the subcontractor will have all the paperwork in by the 30th. They hope it will be.
Right, everyone's pulling the subcontractor. There isn't any major work left to be done. It's a punch list, basically.
What is our timeline before someone says to us, no, you can't get that in?
Give us a blessing to get it done.
Yeah, they didn't put a timeline on it.
So that's on that one. What about the other
same,
one?
Same, same
was
true.
It was the same.
It's identical for both.
He said, just get it done as soon as possible.
That was the value of the visit to Albany, discussing with them to get assurances that there would be aid on both.
I think the only thing really holding it up now is the environmental. We haven't got the one we sent in the fifth time there to get it assessed. It wasn't completely
done.
Well,
it's in phase.
Yeah.
Yeah, the phase two portion, which is, that we're getting a second, because of board policy, we're getting a second set of quotes on the cost for environmental study. But directly related to your question, ZA has been assured of both projects from the head people that make that determination, both in writing as well, verbally as well as in writing. And we have sent them literally over the last couple of days all of the additional correspondence requested by them at that meeting. And we've had nothing back from them other than saying thank you, it's coming in, and everything's moving forward. Okay.
Any questions?
Just looking at a comment, part of the problem, you know, it seems like everything was done slapdash, but part of the problem was we had new people at SED with new interpretations. I think that's caused a lot of the trouble that we're experiencing now. What they said last time isn't what they said this time.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's part of the problem, was changing bull life.
Charles?
All right. So, as you all know, this has been a pretty big week for Beaverton sports. The boys and girls both played PHS this weekend. Both of them won, the girls having been in feed, so they carried their season through. And oddly enough, both of them play Salmon River today for the regional title. Volleyball, who also had an undefeated season, continued that season and won sectionals. And the interesting thing for volleyball, as I understand it, is that this will be the first volleyball team from Section 7 to really be able to continue on due to the fact that we were a little bit out of the loop with our volleyball team, and we had it in the winter sports. This is the first year that it was a fall sport. So now Beaverton is the first team to be able to get out of Section 7 for regional type titles. Cross country also won sectionals. Despite what the newspaper might have you believing, we also overall won. Unfortunately, football wasn't able to beat Peru, although I heard it was an extremely close game. In the music department, Friday the 18th, Beaverton will be hosting Area Allstate. And I have a list of some of the band members that are going to be able to go to that. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get the list from the chorus side of it. But for the band specifically, there will be Sarah Wong, Leanna Gelwicks, Riley Wants, Courtney Wilson, and Matt Dwyer. And there's also a jazz ensemble. And there will be Jack Erwitz and Brandon Bissett Agnew. Later on in the year is Conference All-State. And for chorus specifically, Andrew Currier will be attending that as well. I know that there's some chorus kids that are attending this Friday, but I wasn't able to get that list. Academically, this Thursday is the end of the marking period for first quarter. All the grades have to be in by that point, so you'll probably see kids scrambling in the next couple days to get tests, quizzes, homework in, including yourself. And along with what Mr. Amo presented for the SAD Club, the National Honor Society is doing a food drive to benefit a member of the community that's often overlooked this time of year, and that's actually the animals. And they're going to be doing a food drive for the pets, for the animals at the Elmore SPCA, and that food, I believe, can be donated to can be brought to the school, or you can visit Elmore SPCA's website for a complete list of local businesses that you can drop off the food to. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Minutes. Resolved that the Board of Education does hereby approve the minutes of the meeting of the Board of Education held on 10/25/11, by Richard. Seconded by Carol. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolved that the Board of Education does hereby accept the minutes of the committee meetings held on 11-1-11, that's operations. By Richard. Seconded by Leonard. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education the approval of the CSE recommendations dated 11-8-11, plus the additions that you have.
Second.
By Richard. Second by Carol. Anybody need more time to read the additions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education the approval of the CPSE recommendations dated 11-8-11.
Motion.
Karen.
Second.
And by Kathy. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Appointments. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to appoint the following civil service probationary appointment as indicated.
Motion.
By Leonard.
Second.
And by Carol. Questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve the following winter athletic appointments for the 2011-12 season.
Motion.
By Karen.
Second.
By Carol. Questions, Denise? Richard?
Why is bowling mixed? Too mixed? You have head, instead of having boys and girls like every other sport, they have mixed for head coach and mixed for assistant, but they don't they bowl at the same time? So who's overseeing each? If you got boys bowling, you got girls bowling, who's overseeing what? Every other sport we have has boys and girls.
Can we ask the coach? Kelly?
Both coaches oversee both the boys and girls at the same time.
Both coaches oversee both boys and girls at the same time. You're just kind of moving back and forth and watching stuff.
At the same time.
Okay.
Does that make any sense?
I assume it's pretty close, Matt.
You got two teams of boys at five each, and you got one girl at five. So how are you both running both at the same time is beyond me.
I don't know.
Every other school has it. It's boys and girls. I don't know why it's mixed.
I guess it's...
The question is, how many kids total are bowling?
Yeah, I don't have the total roster yet. We just...
No, I don't mean the roster. I mean total people bowling. There's people that bowl who don't compete.
Right.
And those aren't supervised at all.
Yes, they are.
I went last year, and there were kids at the end of that lane. No one saw them the whole time I was there. They weren't supervised. Nobody talked to these kids at all the whole time. I was sitting at the chair in my...
That was during the match, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
So they're just bowling any old way. We're picking up the tab.
I know what you mean, yeah. There's been some talk about limiting. That's something we can discuss.
So my point is, I don't... If you're going to have a mixed team, why have two coaches? I don't see the need. You're either going to have boys and girls, like you have boys basketball, you've got girls basketball. Every sport has boys and girls.
Well, I'm sure you could take the words out and make one a boys coach and one a girls coach, if that's
that's what I'm saying, though, is because to me, if you're going to have boys competing and girls competing, at least you'd have someone in charge of each one as they compete.
But do you think that maybe the intent is that because they have a head coach and assistant together, they're able to manage the crowd, so to speak, as opposed to sharing the responsibilities? You have a women's coach training just these kids, and then you have another coach having to deal with much more authority that kind of helps out.
Doesn't make any sense to me. If you've got two teams of boys competing, and you got one team of girls, someone should be in charge of the boys, someone should be in charge of the girls, as far as I'm concerned. Because they're two separate teams. The boys compete separately from the girls. So I don't know why we mix the coaches. If you're going to mix the coaches, you might only have one. Because the assistant coach has no authority. So why
is that? Is there a logistical reason why that's like that, or is there a problem with making a boys coach and a girls coach, or
it's only up to
I know it's always been like this, that's all.
Should we just
have a big look at it? Well, you would have to take this off until you get clarification. There may be a reason why it's like that.
We have no other sport like this.
I understand that. I'm just saying there may be a reason. You have to pull these two off of here and then check it out.
And how's the coaching on that?
Well, the problem is, cross country specifically, there's more guys than there are girls. So if you were to split up, and I'm guessing that's how it is for bowling as well, if you were to split it up,
yes,
there would be two teams for under one coach and one team under another. So if you combine it, two coaches to oversee, you'd have to have three coaches if you were to do it that way, if they were going to have the same load.
Well, if you got here, you'd make it half. The assistant coach has got 10 competing, and the other one has got 5, and he makes half as much. You're paying the head coach to do two teams. It's basically.
I guess I'm confused because I see other sports having head coaches and assistants. I realize that normally there are boys and girls, but is the issue? I don't think the issue is that we have two, because one is a head, one is assistant, like in hockey and wrestling and.
Yeah, but if you got two boys teams competing and one girls team competing at the same time, that's what I understand happens, right? They're all competing at the same time.
Yes.
How can one that one? So you're saying that the coach oversees all of that? Because the assistant isn't in charge, he isn't the boys or girls. So how can he watch all three teams? And who makes the decision? Okay, are you doing the girls, are you doing the boys?
There's some input on there.
I might be able to shed some light. Because I used to coach indoor track, it seems very similar. That was considered a mixed sport. And so with two coaches, there was a lot of different activities going on at one time, you know, men's and women. You know, they were out there competing, and you might have jumpers jumping and some throwing, and there's only two coaches, so you really can't be coaching at every location all the time. And so those particular sports, I think, may have been classified as a mixed sport, and depending on the numbers, can justify having the two. But there's always just one varsity and one assistant, but that's the closest kind of similarity that I can come up with with bowling. I know in the track used to be like that as well.
Do the girls bowl exactly the same way boys do, or do they have different techniques or anything like that?
That I don't know.
That's my point. To me, like a boy, you teach me, it'd be great to do a fireball, but a woman weighs 60 pounds, probably isn't going to throw a fireball.
You'd be surprised.
That was my issue.
I guess I don't really understand what the issue is, though.
What I'm saying is, I don't know how many kids are bowling. We got 15 competing, and there's probably, when I was there was over 40 kids there bowling.
Right, right.
So you got two mixed coaches, and I know for sure that some kids aren't being coached. So whose responsibility is it?
I think it's both of the coaches' responsibilities. They just coach the best they can with the kids that they have that are competing.
So then why are we paying for kids just to bowl?
I think at practice, everybody is watched, and everybody has the opportunity to bowl, and everybody is watched, but at the actual meets.
Well, I understand that, but my point is that we're looking at saving money, and you can field three teams of 15 kids and maybe have four or five alternates, but the school, if I'm correct, the school is still paying for the bowling of all those other kids that are there.
Right, and it's always been like that, and that may be, and that's a budget question for this year, for next year's budget.
So I guess the closest analogy I can come up with maybe doesn't make sense, but yeah. That's like saying that if you have a college football, that means that you won't allow anybody with the starters to practice, right? And so only one of the starters should be allowed to have uniforms, and be allowed to practice, and have the financing, the funding associated with.
No, what I'm saying is if it's mixed, it means today you can coach the boys, and if it's mixed, tomorrow you can coach the girls. You can switch back and forth.
Why don't we get some feedback from Mr. Cox?
Sure, Charlie, did you have something else to add? Just
basically, I think some of the stuff that Richard's talking about, the reason why we have so many numbers and so many kids bowling is we've talked over with Ed many years over and over as far as possibly like the other sports, doing cuts, only having so many students bowling. He said it was always no, because of the fact is that there's a lot of kids that bowl that don't have the opportunity to participate in other sports, and this is something for them to participate in. But we did talk last night at the coaches meeting, and it's being discussed about doing cuts this year because of the budget restraints and everything. But another thing to answer your question, as far as the boys and the girls, they both compete at the same time, the same venue. They're only a few lanes apart from each other. They're bowling right together. That's why it's and we both work together as coaches to when they're competing. You know, it's not, and there's tons of paperwork involved as far as they're doing their averages and all kinds of other stuff involved with the sport.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but to me, it's a numbers game. If you're going to have 15 people compete, you know, then you should have a certain number of coaches. If you're going to have 40 people bowling, you have to have someone watch those other kids. And so my question, well, my point is, we cut gymnastics last year, completely cut the sport. We brought it back, but I mean, it was on the cut. But we never addressed the fact that we're just paying to have people bowl who don't compete. So my point is, though, I understand the difference between modified and regular sport. But my point is, if you're going to compete and you're going to have a sport, fine. But are you going to have all these extra kids and have to cut something else?
Well, like I said, and he said they're discussing that this year, and I know it's definitely a topic for discussion for us for next year's budget process. So I don't really know what you would want to change as far as the coaches for this year.
I mean, I want an explanation on why they're mixed, but I still don't, even if we have the kids bowl, if they're bowling there with no supervision, you might as well throw the money out the window, because what are they learning? So that's my issue. If you're going to have those extra 25 kids bowl, someone needs to be in charge of it.
Well, again, like I said, I know that they're being coached during practice, but they're not during the regular matches. They can't be.
Yeah, no. So, they're all out there bowling.
So that's the thing. And we've always had the money in the sports budget to do that before.
Yeah.
It's probably not going to happen. Okay,
I
understand your point. Is it something you want to change for this year?
If there are other sports that do it this way, I don't remember seeing any that were mixed.
Okay. Well, if it needs to be addressed next year, we'll make sure we address it. Any other questions on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to appoint the following individuals as temporary on-call recreation assistants for the 2011-12 school year at $15 per game.
Second.
Leonard. I'm sorry. And Carol. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolved that superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve the following substitute appointments beginning on the date indicated. By Richard. Seconded by Carol. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolved that superintendent of school recommends to the Board of Education to approve the following temporary on-call appointments beginning on the date indicated.
Motion.
Second.
By Karen. Seconded by Richard. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolved that superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education the following permanent civil service appointments as indicated.
Motion.
By Leonard. Seconded by Kathy. All in favor?
Aye.
Oops, I'm sorry.
Is this the one we were talking about last time?
No.
Okay.
No, that's for discussion later. Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The policies, resolved that the Board of Education does hereby approve the following policies. We have the two. By Richard. Seconded by Carol. Any questions on these? Stan, did I answer your computer questions?
Yes.
I did? Okay.
Yes.
I was hoping it did. Okay. Any other questions on these two? Ed?
Did you copy this computer policy?
I actually helped write
his policy, yeah.
That's why you approved it.
That's his policy. Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Gary.
Thanks, Gary.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Whereas Section 3651, 1A and 3A of the education law authorize the school district to establish a reserve fund for the payment of judgments and claims in tax certiorari proceedings and to make payments therefore, and whereas the Board of Education desires to increase such reserve fund to pay for judgments and claims for pending 2011-12 tax certiorari proceedings, now therefore be it resolved that the Board hereby increases the reserve fund balance for the payment of judgments and claims in pending tax certiorari proceedings and authorizes the transfer of such amounts from fund balance in the general fund to the tax certiorari reserve fund as listed below.
Move.
Second. By Richard. Seconded by Carol. Questions?
How was the amount determined?
The amount, we actually receive a formal proceeding, a legal document that they send to us. Attached to that is a report showing the assessed value of the property and then what the petitioner is claiming they think the value should be. And then I pull the current year property tax bill to verify the amount. Effectively, the petitioner is claiming a 90% reduction in their assessed valuation. So they claim their correct assessed value is only 10% of what it actually is. So this represents effectively a 90% decrease in their tax. This is the third year in a row that this particular petitioner has filed a claim against their tax assessment valuation. So it's going through the legal process. And I think that there's another item further on in the agenda about a discussion. We've been asked by other municipalities that have taxing jurisdiction, I believe it's the county and the town of Plattsburgh, that the three municipalities together hire an appraiser to do a formal appraisal to protect the assessed valuation of the particular properties in question. Right now we're up to, I want to say this one is 57,000. The prior years were 55 or 56, so I think we're at, 160, somewhere around 160,000, a little over that combined of the 3 years of potential refunds that we would need to pay back if they are successful in their petition of this.
Just cut it to the chase. That's not what they went that we would owe for the year. And that's how they get the number to take. If they would have, whatever they file, if they win that, the difference is what we put into the certiorari to cover it if they win.
We actually just had one a couple weeks ago, or 3 or 4 weeks ago, that was solved or resolved, and we had an order from the judge. The order and consent came to the board to agree to the agreement on it. I don't remember what the tax property was, but effectively the amount they had initially asked for was maybe 5,000 or 7,000, and they agreed on a smaller amount, and we negotiated on the number of years. Like, okay, you don't get a refund on that year, and you get a refund on this year, and you wait, you know, who knows how negotiations go with that. But if what you take out of fund balance, if you put in a tax cert reserve, if it's not needed to pay that judgment, that money goes right back into the fund balance. You can't spend it for any other purpose. It's reserved for that potential tax judgment.
So they've done this 3 years in a row?
They have filed 3 years in a row with the court to have their assessment revalued.
So should we budget for this for the next year?
She will.
With respect to the...
As long as they're still on the tax rolls at the assessed value by the assessors, we don't really have control over that. We would count it as tax revenue coming in at whatever assessed valuation they're at.
I think it was 7 years of the loan. It was 7 years before we paid. Yeah. That was 7 years. 7 years.
And that was a settlement.
So. Yeah, we paid.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
Have a roll call, please.
Karen Armstrong.
Yes.
Kathy Buckley.
Yes.
Leonard King.
Yes.
Stan Kurowski.
Yes.
Richard Levine.
Yes.
Ed Marin.
Yes.
Carol Race. Yes. Pauline Stone. Steve Trombley.
Yes. The B, resolve the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to accept a donation from the Shazy Lady Eagles in the amount of $10,882.50 for girls hockey for the 2011-12 school year and approve amending the district budget contingent upon receipt of check.
Motion.
By Richard. Seconded by Carol. Any questions on this? Have we gotten the check?
I haven't seen the check come in. Okay. It could have come in and missed me, but I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
I expect it any day because I want to say their first practice was like tomorrow.
Okay.
I was careful with the language before.
Yes.
I was careful with the language amending the district budget because that's really the action that is contingent on getting the check. But from an earlier board resolution, doing anything with the hockey program was totally dependent on receiving the check. So this is basically saying when the check is received in the business office, the district budget can then be amended.
Yep.
And we have Steve set up two separate accounts to track this so that we can also be accountable to the Lady Hockey's Association to show them, you gave us a donation for these specific items, here's how it was spent.
Okay. Good.
I'm just curious to find out where they practice.
Shazy.
They do practice in
Shazy. Just right.
They practice and all their names are there.
Okay.
Any other questions? A roll call, please.
Karen Armstrong.
Yes.
Kathy Buckley.
Yes.
Leonard King.
Yes.
Stan Kroski.
Yes.
Richard Levine.
Yes.
Ed Marin.
Yes.
Carol Reyes.
Yes.
Pauline Stone. Steve Trombley.
Yes. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve the tax collector's report from the town of Plattsburgh and from the towns of Altona, Beatontown, and Shazy, and also certification of school re-levy report in the amount of $972,624.15, and that the said re-levy report be returned to Clinton County by 11/15/11, so that tax may be re-levied as certified by the tax collector. Motion by Richard. Seconded by Carol. Any questions? A roll call, please.
Karen Armstrong.
Yes.
Kathy Buckley.
Yes.
Leonard King.
Yes.
Stan Kroski.
Yes.
Richard Levine.
Yes.
Ed Marin.
Yes.
Carol Reyes.
Yes.
Pauline Stone. Steve Trombley.
Yes. Okay, under additional items, we have a report from Leonard on the bus driver's meeting.
Yes, well, we met. And there was, I don't know, probably 12, 15 bus drivers there. We discussed the routing and stuff that could be done. It's not probably able to be done this year because we'd end up with grievance procedures if we did go that route this year. But I definitely told them that if I recommend it, it's going to be just for the remainder of this year and that it would have to be brought back up. Reroute and follow in another year and to use all bus drivers as well as that computer that they use because the bus drivers got a lot of ideas that computer don't realize could be put into effect. So at this time I would recommend to Mr. Amel there that he make a recommendation to hire on the extra bus driver.
Any questions?
Yes.
Go ahead.
We talked last time. Did you see any reports from that software stuff that we talked about? Wonder if they were using it or not to help out.
He did use it, but that software report, as Shane had mentioned, it can have you cost more. It gives you recommendations, but you really got to know.
Well, so that's kind of what we're getting at. Is the software worthwhile, or should we just not renew the software?
Is it interactive?
I guess I would let him explain that more. I didn't get into that. He's not here tonight.
Yeah.
But I think there's some advantages on that, but don't rely totally on it to make your...
You have to rely on him to make those, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it an interactive program? Like you can put down key bus runs below an hour or not, and number of kids, blah, 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 or is it... How does it utilize information?
It's not interactive in terms of if you make a move in one section of it, it automatically rescatters data and tells you the effects. What it will do, I think it's probably shared, what it will do is tell you when a run is assembled, it will describe the amount of time on the bus that the individuals are riding that bus will take to get from destination A to destination B. What it doesn't do is prescribe any time, cost savings, if you will, on passing by households to keep going to another destination. That requires a human intervention to figure out, okay, how many students and how many households between point A and point B, and is that a cost savings to do it that way? The software doesn't know that. It knows only to take the data you put into it, and then it will assemble it and give you the data back. As I think Mr. Brink pointed out last time, as well as in the meeting, and I wasn't at the meeting, so I'm paraphrasing a little bit, the software, because it is that, the phrase garbage in, garbage out, if you will, which is typical of the computer language, is it will do what you ask it to do. It doesn't make a decision for you as to what's the most cost-effective way to do it.
So next week we'll see that after all the people meet, depending whether or not they come up with alternate routes, is there anybody in the system or who's an expert at it who could assist the district to, someone who's an expert at doing it? Like, for example, I wouldn't mind paying a couple $1,000 somewhere if you could save $100,000 in bus runs. You know what I'm saying? Can't do that ourselves, rather than saying we're going to get another program like we've already done, we've got two programs now. But when we get the second one, no one ever told us that it didn't do what we wanted.
Well, one of the things there that's not going to be very popular, but pickup points is probably going to have to be coming into effect. And people are not going to be happy with it, but it's something that's got to be looked at.
I don't know the speed, the length of the routes.
I mean, not necessarily for elementary, but for the middle school and high school.
Any other questions on this? We will not be meeting again this month. Is there? I'm sorry, Kathy.
You're too quiet today.
Yeah, you're not saying anything.
Well, usually I raise my hand, you know.
No.
One thing I'd like to bring up, since we were talking about the bus drivers, is they did really bring up two issues that they kind of felt like we should discuss. One, I think, is policy based, and that would be senior parking, and somehow coming up with a plan or a policy where students don't leave the parking lot until after the buses have emptied the parking lot. So once they've picked up their students, the buses completely leave, then high school students leave the parking lot. I guess there's been quite a few incidences where students... Go ahead.
I was going to save that for the safety meeting because that's coming up on the
16th,
and that's
okay.
The safety factor.
Mr. Batten used to stay out there all the time. He still does.
He's there most of the time.
Yeah. I know he used to be. I used to see him up there all the time.
I think he does, and I think he tries to work them in together, but I still think there's a few rebels which there will always be, but I think it was something that they really felt needed to be addressed.
Where they will lose their right if they don't.
Yes, that there's a direct consequence.
But we did discuss in the operations committee, it's not just the students, it's two other problems. Mm-hmm. You have teachers leaving before the buses, which I don't think you're supposed to do. So you've got teachers trying to leave, you've got students trying to leave, and the buses are trying to get out.
Parents
for pickups.
Yeah.
So you've got a lot more than just that. That's not at all.
And the other was the safety issue concerning the crosswalk, but you're going to save that for your safety meeting, so stop there.
We're picking up, stop parents stopping in the road to pick up their kids. That's the same issue.
Does the board want to pick up the meeting with the policy on that for the driving? Add it to my list of.
Yes.
Okay.
To take a look at it. Kids trying to get.
Because when the buses are leaving, that's all students should be leaving.
As far as the bus driver goes, we do not have another meeting this month. Is this something you guys want to put on the agenda next month, or do you want to act on this?
I'll do it for the rest of the year, if that's what you want.
I would say we have something.
We can act on it tonight.
Because you can't change routes now. I don't see an option.
It's hard to get.
Give a name. You would want to appoint an individual.
There you go.
Well, you're going to be there. Okay.
That's what it is. You did tell me.
Just so it reads, it's only for the year. It's not.
Well, it's always contingent on that anyways. Yeah. We always do that anyway.
Joanne, just help me on the term of is it probation?
Probation employment for a year under probation.
For the remainder of the school year?
No, it's
a, or well, state specific.
It's state specific. It's from now until a year out, but it's not a year from today. It's a year, working year.
Okay.
It would be a working year, so it's like.
Is this sub-time calendar?
No, it's no. It'll be February. It's 8th, so maybe 9th. February 13th of 2013. So it'd be from November 9th, which would be tomorrow, to February 13th of 2013. That's his probationary period.
Okay. Go ahead.
And the salary is...
I'll make one.
That's what I do.
Whatever the contract says. I don't know what the salary is. Whatever the contract says.
So it's going to be per the contract?
Per the contract.
Or superintendent recommendation.
So basically the recommendation of superintendent schools to the Board of Education to appoint Larry Hebert for a probationary appointment as school bus driver effective the dates that you just provided.
Tomorrow
to 11-9 to his probation period 11-9-11 to February 13, 2013.
Okay. And salary is per consistent the with the contract. Yeah.
Okay.
Prorated, or is that done by runs?
By runs, I think. I think it's by runs.
Okay.
You all set with that then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody set with that? Okay, I need a motion. Richard?
Seconded
by Leonard. Any other questions on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, I'm going to go down to the last one. This is a discussion of the Town of Plattsburgh's request for sharing the appraisal cost regarding the GBR Plattsburgh Limited Liability Company on Route 3. What it is, it's the parcel, the old PNC Plaza. Does it also include the old Rosebud site?
It's three separate parcels.
So yes, there was three separate parcels there, so it's where the roadhouse is now.
Yeah, that's
the roadhouse. Our cost would not exceed $3,200 on this. That's our share of the appraisal cost. We have the biggest... I didn't keep that paper, Mary. I don't know if you can read it. It's quite substantial for the school district.
So the only fault in the town of Plattsburgh that we have where PNC was.
Yes.
Yes.
So there's a line right there from so far from the PNC old building over to all these. It's not ours, and we own. But our district is this way.
Right, but the town of Plattsburgh. This is a share for the town of Plattsburgh and the school district.
And the county. Three different taxing jurisdictions, and they broke it down by percentage for 2010 and 2011. Beacontown School District in 2010 represents 64.6% of the total, and the county represents 23.4%, and the town represents 12%. For 2011, the school represents 62%, with the county at 23.7% and the town at 14.3%. So the recommendation or the request from all three agencies was the fairest way to divide up the appraisal fee is the percentage pro rata, equal to the percentage of taxing jurisdiction. So
the appraisal fee was about $5,000?
The initial appraisal fee came in at $5,000. We asked if they could go to RFP or get multiple appraisals to see if we can do any better on the $5,000. But with the concept being for the school to agree that we wouldn't do an appraisal if it cost more than $5,000, so that would cap us at $3,200. That's 64% of the $5,000 would be approximately $3,200. But, you know, if you get an appraisal that comes in at $2,500, it'd be half of that. You know, okay. The idea is to try to get a lower appraisal if you can.
Right. Joe?
Yes. You brought to my attention that the Clinton County will not contribute to be part of the proceeding. Apparently, there's a resolution that was passed by the county in 1995, which provides that only those tax certiorari proceedings involving assessment challenges on property with an assessed valuation greater than $5 million will the county participate. So this is going to be a venture between the school district and the town of Plattsburgh.
Which will affect those numbers?
Which is going to affect that number. It wouldn't be $3,200 anymore. Did you have you have the figures on what we stand to lose for?
It's $167,000.
Yeah, and we have 62 point something percent of that. So
No, I think that's our percentage.
Oh, that's our percentage?
That's the total of our, of the taxes that we have collected that we would have to repay.
Is $160,000.
$167,000. So I guess, so how much would you spend on an appraisal to protect that?
You know, even if we go up the whatever it has to be, I mean, that's a lot of money.
Is that the change? $160,000 is...
That's just the change.
Just the change.
Yes.
Right. Is that
No. This is they petitioned this 3 years ago.
Yeah,
this is the third year they've done.
I'll make a motion, Steve.
Okay, I've got to move. I have a resolution here, but I'm going to have to. Mary, can you
recalculate
that?
If the county is not going to participate, what would be the effect on the percentage?
Unless
of the town?
I can take this out. I can just. Stop it.
You could.
So we have to have a cost.
Who's going to pay for their amount?
The town.
The county. They're not going to pay.
They're not.
Well, it's split between the town and the school district.
Split the difference.
Right. That's what I was saying. If we recalculated what the resolution would be supporting.
But we can vote on it. We're signing the numbers. Right?
I'll just.
You know roughly what that is.
If we had to pay it all, we could.
Yeah.
Is that what you want to
say?
Okay, that's what I'm voting.
That's what we're looking for.
Yeah, I have a resolution then.
Does the board still want to prorate it with the town of Plattsburgh?
Yes.
Want them to pay. So effectively, we take our percent, their percent. Now that becomes the 100%.
Right.
And share it pro rata.
Right. Okay. We resolve that upon recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves sharing in the cost of an appraiser with the town of Plattsburgh to appraise the property of GBR Plattsburgh LLC and Plaza and Gibraltar Management Company Incorporated at a cost not to exceed $5,000. Motion by Richard.
Second.
By Carol. I don't need a roll call on this, though.
No.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Now let's have it. Building use guidelines.
Pretty much something like that.
No, there is nothing. This is weird.
Oh, wow.
So now we can, yeah, anybody can ask Mary questions.
Maybe so, just a couple of quick introductory statements. Building use guidelines is a topic for discussion because, as Mrs. Blaine mentioned earlier, we get repeated requests from various organizations, members, et cetera, to use various portions of the building's facilities, be it cafeteria, the fitness center, space in any of the buildings, et cetera. Under a contingency budget, we're significantly limited by the number of offers that can be considered for approval without there being a guarantee to the comptroller and to the voters that there's a cost that's been assessed or assigned to that particular function. In short, the activities can't occur if, in fact, the taxpayers under a contingency budget are in any way asked to share that portion of the use of the building. So, for example, if an auditorium is requested for use under a normal budgeting procedure or an earlier budget procedure, if you will, the request would come into Buildings and Grounds. The opportunity to use the facility would be considered. And largely, if it benefited students directly, there would be, we have on the books, I should quickly say, a policy that speaks to this, but historically that has been not looked at very carefully with event by event, and therefore some events were allowed to occur, and most events, quite frankly, were allowed to occur because of such minimal costs associated with it. If the auditorium lights are turned on for an hour and a half to benefit a function, and that was the total cost, it became okay to do. Under contingency budget, can't do that. So what the district is challenged by is with these multiple requests that we receive, is how to figure out what a fair, if in fact that's the decision of the board, to try to figure out a way to set rates for participation in these multiple kinds of activities. On what basis does the business office set that rate? How do we collect the monies for the use and how to govern, in fact, if you will, if there's any breaches to the agreements, such as using a cafeteria, using the gymnasium, when is the light on versus not on, how much does a kilowatt hour cost for to leave a light on in a room, etc. It predominantly affects community groups, put simply. It means that if we had opened our doors to a club meeting from a community that wanted to just use the room for an hour, and the lights were on following this board meeting, that's one thing. But given that we're in a contingency budget, just using the room after a board meeting doesn't work anymore. So the question becomes how to begin to determine whether or not there are fees to be assigned for the usage, and who's going to have that responsibility for all of those items to monitor, in fact, that the fees, if you will, have been paid, have been collected, and there are no outstanding balances, and all the kinds of issues that you can imagine occur with wanting to use the facility and the check is in the mail kind of thing. And that's simply because of the challenge presented to us as a district that we bring it forward for consideration. I will quickly add that I participated in a conversation with Chuck and Charles rather on the use of the fitness center as a prime example of what to do. We have several parents who have approached me formally with the prospect of serving as volunteers to keep the fitness center open for specified hours and take all the responsibilities associated with CPR and AED training, etc. And that's a wonderful expression to be able to do that. The challenge becomes whether or not under a contingency budget that can just occur because of volunteerism as opposed to the participants who show up maybe asked to pay for that hour of the workout. And then using that one example, how does a district compute 5 hours, 5 times a week, this person, somebody else once a month, somebody else, you can kind of get the magnitude of the question. So we brought it forward, asked to bring it forward as a discussion topic for the full board to figure out what responses you might have to those challenges.
It seems to me, having gotten into it, it's very labor intensive for the district. Not only do they have to check with Ed Cook for scheduling, they have to check building and grounds. Is it something that can be free? Does it have to be charged? And then it has to go over to Mary. Mary, how much is it going to cost for electricity? How much is it going to cost? Does the janitor have to go in? Is there going to be snow removal? And it seems to me, I have to ask Mary, but these requests are taking up a lot of time and we just cut somebody from business. How much time of a day is being used up on this when you could be doing something else? So it comes down to because you can't sit there with a list and say this is going to cost this every time. It's always going to change. Somebody has to compute that. So how many requests do you get? So if Mary's sitting there all day long trying to figure out, okay, this one's 100, this one's 75, this one's 76.59. It's just so time consuming that you either come up with just a set fee for a day, or you don't allow it because it's just taking up a lot of time with the staff.
Right. Okay. Do you want to spend $20 to get a tab?
Well, yeah. For example, like say someone says, well, you charge me 70. You say, okay, it's going to be $75 to use the building, and then it snows. Then okay, now we have to charge $20 for snow removal. I mean, you're either going to have to go with a set amount or not allow it because we constantly be adjusting it.
Some of the programs, though, are fundraising clubs or activities, and without having the space to do their meetings and things like that, then a lot of teachers would go without that extra money that these clubs or FSOs provide.
Yeah, but that would be another one.
Okay, Karen, go ahead.
To share my opinion, we're in a contingency situation. We don't have a choice about that. And community use of the building is not allowed unless, and in my opinion, we have to set a rate. And if let's pretend there's not custodial or security staff on call on Saturdays, as an example, then that would have to be one rate for the community group, whether it's by the hour But we need to establish a rate and whatever factors we need to build in to establish that rate. If I request to use the facility in the evening where the custodians, it doesn't interfere with the cleanup, for example, and they're able to do the room at the end of the evening, maybe that's a different rate. But I think we need to establish a rate because we can't figure these things for every request for the building use. And to answer the question, if I'm requesting the building on a particular form and I have to pay $50, $100, whatever the amount is, my check should come in with that request to pay in advance. So the district has the money. We've met the obligations under what we need to do as a district, but that would be my suggestion.
Anybody else? Wait, you had more, Richard?
Well, I got a question, Karen. So you're saying we still have to... Okay. You're saying make a chart. Okay, how much is it for every minute for lighting or something?
No, I'm saying whether you decide you're going to charge by the hour... if that's how they request the facility or rate. By the day, you establish a rate.
Okay.
We need the building supervised, so you're going to have to pay someone if they're not on duty anyway.
So you mean like, say, $7,500 it's for everybody?
Yes.
Okay.
But can I add, just from the business perspective, typically when you do what's called, sell assessment, whether it's a company that makes widgets or a business or a legal firm, you have overhead, fixed and variable overhead rates that are set based on the size of the facility and the people and support that requires to manage that. So, frankly, we should know what our fixed and variable overheads are for our budget purposes in our institution by building anyway. We should know, the high school versus this elementary, this elementary, because we need to know what it costs to have that institution, number one. And so out of that, we back out what this library per square foot comes out to cost, so that if they need to use this amount of spaces, what's going to cost you? If you need this much more spaces, what's going to cost you? It's not that hard to do. It really is not. It's overhead rates, and then you figure out, now as far as lighting, it's wattage. You get a bill that tells you what your dollars per kilowatt hour are. You could probably throw a factor, but that could also be folded into the square foot. Square footage is really the easiest way to...
I've done that, Ed. Okay. The challenge with that is every group needs a different area of a complex that has 400,000 square feet. Every room,
right.
There's different dimensions. It's still to customize it for each group's request is still... Even coming up with a standard cost is still very customized and labor intensive.
Right. I wasn't saying you can't do it, but I'm thinking, I said on this morning, I said on the BOCES board, we don't figure our budget like that. They do.
No, I understand.
Because they already have their numbers, for each section, but we don't have that.
So if we came up with what a footage cost, you're saying that would cover some anyway?
But my recommendation would be that's the only basis that I can come up with information to give to the board
right.
to determine how you're going to set your rate, whether it's a daily or hourly rate, whatever.
Sure.
But some groups, what if you have the fitness center and there's only one person using it on Wednesday night and there's 10 people? Doesn't matter because it may become cost prohibitive for the particular groups. And then you have groups that have self-interest, whether it's the FSO or the Booster Club, and I did have a visit today from Mrs. Pelkey on behalf of the Booster Club just to stress to me the importance and the value that they bring to the table in fundraising for the purpose of supporting specific requests and activities
yep.
of the district. And I pointed out that I'm not making up these rules. Education law has existed for 100 or 200 years, I have no idea, but education law says when you're in a contingency budget, you have a restriction. To come up with a rate to apply consistently to all the groups, one group may not be of any more or less value than another group. We're not here to value these groups. So trying to come up with a fair, reasonable, consistent rate to apply across the board.
So, again, I think you're right, square footage is in the way because then if you have a rate for, let's say, the fitness, then they have to talk to themselves. The only way we can make this cheap enough is for so many of us to go in a certain amount of time, because you can't.
Who's going to administer that?
And they, I mean, have to do it. They have to do it themselves. I mean,
yeah, that's really difficult. And just to, I mean, don't get me wrong, I really like the fitness center, and I've used it myself, and there's a lot of people in the public that use it. The just to play devil's advocate here for a second, there's tremendous wear and tear that gets put on that equipment during the course of the year. With the budget the way it is right now, if something breaks in that room, it's going to stay broken for the year, and the kids aren't going to get to use it because it's.
We paid a warranty. We did before.
We did.
An annual service maintenance. Yeah. We have it serviced annually, and we had been allocating that cost to community recreation. It's a very small part of the budget, somewhere around 7140 account code line, and the rest went through physical education and interscholastic sports for the remaining maintenance. We're in a contingency budget this year. Community recreation was required to be pulled out of the budget.
Right.
So that means the full cost of the service and maintenance agreement of the fitness center is falling into the physical education budget and the athletics budget. Something breaks, students now don't have access because we don't, unless we get a donation,
right,
we don't have any way to fix it, except unless it can be serviced.
Sure.
Hopefully things can be serviced and they're not wear and tear items.
This
and hopefully the contingency is just a one-year thing.
Isn't an easy, Charles, go ahead.
I was one of the ones that caused this issue with talking to Mr. Amo, but one of the main concerns I have as representing the students is that the fitness center right now really isn't accessible to the students. That was one of the reasons why we were trying to get it set up for an after-school type thing, because right now, as it is, it's not really used during the day for the gym classes, and after school there has to be a coach present. And so early on in the football year, they might use that to lift weights, but they have their own weight room. And the other, almost every sports program, they are either at the bowling alley, they are on the field, they're doing something or other with their sport. So the kids that aren't playing sport right now don't have access to those facilities. So we are trying to set up an after school, whatever it be, 6 to 8 o'clock or something, where the entire community can use it, partially because the students, I wouldn't expect, would be available to supervise themselves. They wouldn't have the CPR training, so we were hoping to get community members that could supervise these facilities so that it could be accessible to the students. Right now, with the contingency budget the way it is, these facilities aren't being used. So the wear and tear, so they could be accessible in the future, they're not being used now.
Okay.
That's the only concern that.
The problem I see with the square footage is, say you had one night, you had 400 groups want to use the building. So you got the cafeteria, the auditorium, you got the gym, you know, you got the library. Now, every one of them would have to pay a different rate, even if it's the same number of people, because this has less square footage. So
yeah,
this is going to be cheaper than the auditorium. So you could have six people and say, well, the only place you can put you is in a gym. But there's how many square foot here, so you're going to pay $300.
Yeah.
So I see that being a problem, too.
I don't know. Anybody else have any opinions on that? This is impossible.
What percent difference does this impact the budget?
I don't know what you mean.
It's not really the law.
It's not a budget impact.
I'm thinking outside the box. It seems like it's so much effort for.
And we're under a microscope all the time. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
I think you're better off to come up with, set a day rate, and it'll average out. I mean, sometimes it'll snow. And sometimes it won't. Sometimes they'll use more electric.
Yeah, but if it snows, we basically are clearing that all the time. I mean, the school, for emergencies, it has to be cleared for Monday.
Say someone wants to use the place at 8 o'clock Friday night.
You still have to have an emergency lane for traffic to come in and out if there's a fire or...
you got 60 people coming in, they're going to go
snow, the park bottle. Snow removal is done basically... all the time.
The thing of it is, when we have a heavy snow, this facility is closed anyway.
Yeah,
so you're not going to use it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
A lot of times there's snow. I don't know if there's snow.
How did we determine the rate for the the rental space for preschool. It was like $300 a room or something along those lines. How did we determine that rate?
I don't know how it was originally calculated, but it hasn't changed in several years. It's just been a flat amount, and it's only applied to the classroom within Cumberland Head building and not the modular building that's on the land at Cumberland Head, but they separately maintain that except for water and sewer that comes through our building and goes into their building. You have UPK in the classroom, they're paying the rent for it. We have the modular building, UPK, and they're not paying the rent, but we have dual enrolled UPK students in that facility that's part of our grant program. Mm-hmm. We have the West JZ building, and we have the Dodge Library, which the district is not using that building at all, and we have a separate entity up there.
That's linked to it.
Mm-hmm. You know, we just need to determine how we're going to move forward on this. How are we going to define it and work within these?
Does the use of that modular building put us in trouble too?
Have students in there.
We have students.
We have dual enrolled UPK students that are served. We have UPK students served
now
by the district.
We always
have.
I know, but we might not in the future.
Yeah.
So then would that
but it's grant funded, right?
It is, but not all of it.
Yes, it's 100% funded by two separate grants.
UPK, how much did we say it cost us last year? We asked.
It was partially funded by the general fund.
Yeah.
This year, in this budget, it's 100% funded through grants, and it's two separate grants.
We used the EduJobs money.
Correct.
Yeah, but we don't have that next year.
No, that's why we said it's probably not.
So my question would be, so next year, say there is no pre-K, and we're no longer dual enrolled, and then what does that do with the law?
Well, I think we're getting a little off track because we're supposed to be talking about
whether
or not we're going to be.
It's
yes, but the facility now we have under
we have an agreement
constraints.
With that. Yeah, we have an
so we need to
for this year.
We need to focus on this year.
You don't know if you're going to be in a contingency next year. There's
right.
lots of variables that change year to year. These questions are being raised because we're in a contingency right now, and there's the law here that says you need to follow this. We're in a contingency. We haven't been in a number of years, so we can't take it for granted. It's not business as usual. We define it, we identify it, and we address how we're going to move forward. That's the reason.
I really think we need to set a rate, and it can be calculated by the average usage of the materials that they're going to have in here. And the rate would be one rate for day use when the school is in session and you have people here, an evening rate when you don't have that type of coverage, and a weekend rate. And I would have to say weekends are out.
Hourly?
We're going to have to just...
Would it be hourly? Like, depending how long you're here?
Oh, I think... Yeah, it could be hourly. It could be...
Because if someone wants it 1 hour, if someone wants it 7 hours...
Well, I think most of them would be... A room or a specific area. How are you going to do the fitness center? Like was mentioned, some nights you have 22 in there, some nights you have 4 in there. How are you going to?
I think
it's
you set a rate.
It's
set a rate.
Who's
using it?
If they don't have the money to repay, they don't use the facility.
Well, that's
one
year.
Difficult one.
In setting a rate, if I could throw a few things in here, in setting a rate, I think you'd almost have to assume maximum use of the space.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which presumes that the rate would apply for the minimum use of the space. And anybody using the space would know that this is the rate, whether it be 100 of your friends with you or you alone. That's one piece of the factor we
right.
need to consider. Coming up with that rate is going to be a little bit of an interesting experience, but we can try that. But also, there's a possibility, none of these being terribly popular, I understand, there's also the possibility of limiting the space on campus that is available to you.
I was just going to say that.
Perhaps you, as a board, you want to target, if you will, or identify those locations for which we have a way to get a better handle on costs, such as a fitness center, not to drop names, but there's a facility.
There's a lot of interest there.
And pursue that angle, and other requests for using other portions of the building would not be approved because we have no clearly defined way of measuring its
value. Well, you can set 4 or 5, even if you use the,
yeah,
the library, the auditorium, the cafeteria.
That's the only way of going about it. And then it will become first come, first serve on the request to use that space, at that fee to use the space. It's another thought.
Ed?
With the budget issues over the last couple of years, has there been any history or precedent set by any of the other districts in the state to do with this?
I've seen other districts apply use fees this year that aren't in a contingency budget, that are just applying use fees for groups to come in and use their facility.
Well, I'm looking for examples of how they figured it out.
How's that going to be figured out?
Yeah, but see, I don't think you can do it. Like, if you're going to do it for a gym, it has to be a set amount, because someone says, I want the gym, and I'm the only one here, so give me a good rate. Because someone else can come in with 50 kids. You got to have one rate to use it.
Right, and if, I mean, so what if...
You can do it by the hour.
If we've collected enough money on these, and at the end of the year, we've made a profit, now we're in real big trouble.
How would you know you made a profit?
It's got to all be tracked.
I mean, if we have to track everything, there's no sense even doing it, because all the
people...
It
has to be tracked.
Yeah, but how do you track? Say Ed Cook gets called and somebody's on their line for 10 minutes, and then it goes to Building and Grounds, they're in line for 20, 25 minutes trying to figure out what room they want. And then it goes to Mary, and Mary has to figure out how... I mean, you're talking a lot of money.
I know, you have a few real major events that I don't know if people are remembering that happen here during the course of the year, and that's the fitness center gets used a lot. You have a major wrestling tournament that's not really associated with the Eatontown School that uses our facility for the weekend. You've got Lions Club using the cafeteria for breakfasts. This affects everybody. It affects a huge amount of the community, and our hands are tied by law.
Can we postpone a decision on this?
Let
the community, you know, we have that line for the budget. Can they also use it for other things? Maybe they have some suggestions on this.
We could try that, and we can let Mary go, and I don't know how you.
It's the law.
It's the law.
We cannot allow outside organizations or community use of our building without charging them. And if they don't want to pay the fee, they'll have to get a neighboring district to use their facility.
I think everybody agrees on that. I think it's more a question of what method are we going to use to determine how we're going to charge. Right?
I think a good suggestion, rather than all of us at once trying to, is probably set up a small committee to work with Dan and a few other people and Mary, and get together and just look at some cost ideas and some other ideas and bring it back as a group.
And the reason we brought it to the board is because Mary, Mr. Amo, and myself sat down for about, I don't know, 45 minutes maybe, and every good suggestion we were able to make, the other two were able to shoot holes in it.
So we
got nowhere. That's why we said we're going to bring it to the full board and see if there's any suggestions. I don't know where we're going.
Like Ed says, there should be a way to figure, if you talk square footage, there should be some way to figure how much it costs us to heat a square foot, how much it costs us to light the building.
Absolutely, we can do that. I can take the electricity bills and the fuel bills, and I can do it by building, because it's going to be different for this building than what it is for Cumberland Head, and I can come up with those standard costs. But you just need to understand that it's not one or two or three. Yeah. It's 40, 50, 60 per month.
Yeah.
This building is used from 6 a.m. until 10 at night. Yeah.
It's a lot.
Time consuming is what you say.
There's a lot of use.
And again, the size of the group using the facility is an independent variable in terms of the cost.
Yeah, but
once a fee is set, it becomes clear that one person wants to use it, that's the fee.
Right.
The question of equity comes into the picture. These are prickly issues connected to a really otherwise
it's a lot of money, but if some of this is used, the library will pay for it anyways. So it's about finding something that addresses the delta and change in what it would cost to otherwise be here, right? So those things are key, because heating is not really going to change. Maybe turning on the lights, that might be something,
The big variable is your custodial staff and your buildings and grounds maintenance. Do I need to sand and salt the sidewalks? Because if somebody falls on an icy sidewalk, which happens every winter, that's an issue. Which leads me into this another part of the discussion is the insurance coverage. Our board policy dictates that anybody using a facility outside of our educational K-12 programming activity, interscholastic sports, outside of what happens here for educational purposes, all of these groups, informal or formal, the policy says, is required to provide insurance. Everybody's balking at that. Nobody's even heard of that before. I think the last time it's been in the board policy for 10 years, it was updated in 2000, I think. I didn't just imagine this and create it to give everybody a hard time.
I think over the last few years, what's been required, and I don't know who uses the fitness center more than I do, isn't there a waiver there that you sign off on for liability?
Yes, there's a waiver that they have to sign when they get the training. The biggest issue that, I mean, if we all decide to come up with a fee policy, I definitely would recommend that the fitness center be a separate part of that. And I just have to chime in a little bit that I have a problem with community use of the fitness center at this point when the kids aren't even using it after school. I'm just going to say that.
The idea was
well, the problem with that, it's a great idea, but you have a huge liability allowing the general, our community population coming in and working out with our students at the same time. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Huge liability.
Okay. Ed, do you have some time to sit? Okay. How about Ed and myself and Mary, Mr. Amo, Tracy, would you be available
yes.
to just to give us some
thank
insight?
You.
Well, you ran the fitness center for a number of years. That's why I want some input on the fitness center. Okay, so you can try to set.
You can take a minute to think about it.
So we include liability in the field.
Mary, the question before we meet that I if you could answer is from the insurance company, is a waiver considered legal? If somebody signs a waiver saying that I take full responsibility for myself, or does it have to be an actual certificate of insurance?
I think they each provide different things. Our board policy requires the insurance.
Right, but lease, because I know over the last few years.
Signing a waiver doesn't prohibit anybody from still suing the district. And now I need to take budget money to protect or to pursue that lawsuit versus somebody giving me an insurance certificate, naming Beekman Town Central School as an additional insured on a primary and non-contributory basis, which means it goes to their insurance company before it comes to our insurance company before it filters down to the school district.
So that
to protect the district, you want insurance certificates from these other groups. You have no control over these groups. And there's also a confusion over what's an outside group and what's not an outside group.
Right.
K-12 educational curriculum classes are Beekman Town Central School. The extracurricular clubs for which we pay stipends for, those are kind of outside groups for this purpose. The comptroller has written us up for the last 7 years because we haven't been charging them fees for bus transportation when they take a trip. They are their own kind of little group. The students elect officers for that group. They have monthly meetings. They have bylaws. They do their own fundraising, and they spend their own money how the group determines to spend it. We have been subsidizing those activities, but that's a separate group. The Booster Club is a separate group. The FSOs, PTOs, they're separate groups. Even though they've never provided insurance certificates in the past, doesn't relieve them of the obligation and the responsibility to do it now.
I'd like to get somebody from the Booster Club.
Someone needs to go and get as many of these insurance certificates as we can.
Get them from
if
where?
It's policy, we need to have
them. Well, no, we have to do our board policy.
That.
We're gonna.
I've actually volunteered on behalf of the FSO for every building, the elementary schools, middle school, high school, and the Booster Club to collectively seek out quotes from an insurance company to get them a group policy to help minimize the cost on
them.
I'm doing everything we can to help them.
We've done that.
I can't change the law.
The issue is being diplomatic about it, so I'll put a little more of a spin to it. The resistance to pay for that, which has never been required to pay for in the past, is as much a shock value to an otherwise pretty inexpensive way to get in line with board policy.
It is what it is. So we need to support Mary's request to get the information.
Yeah, she has that. And the question is the board's enforcement of or...
Can I be diplomatic to my side? At some point, as an institution, we have to say, at some point you have to say, well, it doesn't matter if we want to be diplomatic. This is the policy, we have to do it.
Right. That's what the conversation
is.
Right,
I agree.
Joe?
Has anyone spoken with our insurance agent to see if there is coverage, if as long as the district has given the group permission to come in and use the facility?
I have explored that with them, yes.
And what is their position?
We have to still follow our board policy, which is considered like our local law.
Well, right, but if our board policy changed, I mean, the reason to...
If we change our board policy, then we effectively enhance or increase our scope of liability to include all of those groups by not requiring them to provide certificates of insurance. And that's really what it comes down to. Do you expand your scope of liability exposure, change the policy, don't require the outside groups to provide the insurance, and you open it up and you provide it for them? That it really comes down to that, because at the end of the day, when something happens and you are sued, who is going to be held responsible for that? Something may never happen in 100 years, and you know, let's hope that that's the case. But if something does, in anticipated tight future budgets, that's going to take away from resources.
I'm just wondering the cost of it. As it stands right now, you have many members of the public coming out of school property, participating in activities at the school, whether you're at the football field or in the auditorium. They don't sign a waiver when they come in, and they don't need a insurance certificate to attend activities at school. So I'm just wondering what additional cost there might be. I would think it's going to be de minimis myself. So maybe there should be some inquiry to find out how much we're talking about.
I got a ballpark figure just specifically for the groups, the FSOs, PTOs, and Booster Club collectively, and it was somewhere between $300 and $800 collectively for them to all share. To expand it to other groups, I don't know who's using the fitness center. What is the supervision? What if somebody has a heart attack? You know, what if somebody has a diabetes? Who knows what the what ifs are? The fact that it's a group managed by themselves with their own spokesperson overseeing the use, you know, whether it's a pancake breakfast, a spaghetti dinner, whatever it is, if we're not going to have supervision there, people that we can count on, that we've hired to be there and oversee it, you're just assuming that everything's going to be okay.
I agree with Mary. I don't think you should pick up more liability in the school.
Steve. I'd just like to make a comment to support Mary. Yeah. In a neighboring school district, no one was allowed to use that facility unless from an outside organization, unless a certificate of insurance was provided ahead of that building being used. Right. So this isn't something
new. Okay. Well, look, we've got a committee and we've got a whole bunch of stuff to check out ahead of time, and we'll try to have something in place by the next meeting, or something to bring back to you by the next meeting if we can. This is a difficult problem, so we'll do our best. All right, so where I'm at. Operations Committee update. If everybody read their minutes that was here, they're very lengthy. Does anybody have any specific questions about those that Mr. King could answer?
Thank you.
Anytime, Larry.
That was a long meeting, wasn't it?
Well, we were there for 3 hours with Patrick Eck, and we discussed both the phase one status, which was your hot water tank and your underground sewer line replacement thing. They are both in their completion stage. As we mentioned before, there's by the end of 30 days, it should be hoping that closed out so that we can get the money moved around. The second phase of it there is part of spending the remainder of what's in the Excel fund, and it's really up in the air right now. They've got different parts of it there that they're going to work with, and I hope that they can come back to us there and tell us what is going to be next on the line to go to. We do have some things that come on ahead. We have some things here, but I don't want to mention them yet until they give us the final okay.
Okay. Karen.
Just one question, Leonard, I had out of curiosity. On the auditorium lighting status, do we know when the problem developed? When the work was done that created the problem?
It was when it developed. It was probably when they did it. Was it the 2000 project?
We did it on the original. It was on the original Excel.
I'm saying is the problem was made because they mixed wire.
The stage was set for the problem to emerge, I think, at that point, Mr.
So
King is speaking.
2002?
There's been problems in FRI. We had a fire up in that control box probably 10 years ago.
What was the project time?
2005?
2005, is that
this
what was?
This was before that, even.
I just can't believe that anybody would do that, you know.
We have experienced from members in the audience and the board who have gone to functions in the auditorium, off and on, a speaker may go out, as it were. You know, we've heard during performances where the mics went dead. And despite all the best efforts of Gary and his team and everybody else, they typically have been minor enough that a resolution will somehow, like, you know, kick the tires and the speakers work again. Well, the problem has been traced to something that is becoming more and more of an issue, which calls the lights out, as it were, for the entire auditorium soundboard, as we experienced it a couple weeks ago. The resolution is going to require much more extensive repairing, and I've provided, I think, to the board an update on how it's been put together now, and we're good through the spring, but as part of the operations committee, they're going to need to get quotes from potential vendors to bring to the board's attention to make a decision what you want to do with this problem, given that the temporary solution to it is good, probably until late spring, but waiting until late spring changes quotes and prices that we're seeking now. So it's one of those
issues. Is it the problem with our copper wires to aluminum wire?
That is the origination of the problem, yes.
So the average is too high for the wire?
Well, probably the aluminum wire is no good anyways.
The aluminum, they can't find where it is.
They don't like one.
Well, yeah, the other thing about the aluminum is it's very hard to localize it, so it
melts it. Okay, any other question? Yep, go ahead.
One of the other things that was discussed was the West Shazy winterization to shut down that building. And we have people from the Dodge Library here tonight. Because it's going to create a problem probably between winterization, the cost factor, and who's going to absorb it. Since we're on austerity, we're not allowed to put any money there. So they are here. I hope Mary can meet with them after, and Mr. Amel can meet with them after to be able to discuss this and give us some update on it. Okay. And we also can't forget the West Shazy, we do have to do something with that. We just can't let that go forever either. So.
Questions on that? Does anybody have any other additional items they'd like to bring up? Karen?
I'd just like to make a comment for all the residents that are here. My memory, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, last year we collected data as a Board of Education about the enrollment in classes, as I recall. And I believe, I'll go back to my notes, but I believe we have again requested that information, but again, giving staff time with the opening of school and the things that have hit our plates early on in this season. But I just wanted the residents to know that the Board of Education does have their finger on the pulse, and we do ask for different information as we look toward our budget process. And thank you, Steve.
Okay. Okay.
That was part of my question, or my comment, too. We did ask in the past for the, I had asked for class sizes under 10 last year, and I don't recall seeing the numbers that were cited tonight in that list. So I'd like to see how, I'd like to know how many classes we have that kind of people, that number of people in them. And I think we need to look at a minimum class size policy, because you got 2-3 kids in a class, that's not good spending, we're not taking good care of the money. Because, I mean, I understand it's convenient for the parents or convenient for the community, but at some point, there, you know, if we can't offer it in the morning and the afternoon, we can only offer it in the morning one semester. Maybe we can offer it in the afternoon next semester. We have to do something. We just...
Well, I think that's all going to be part. We all know that that's going to be part of this year's budget process. So that's, I think it's already being done anyway. So. Anybody else have any other items to discuss? Okay, we have some time for public comment, about 15 minutes, if anybody would like to address the board at this time.
I guess I'm just a little mystified about this whole process with, you know, the groups paying for the school. I mean, I get that the outside groups, I don't know exactly what kind of outside groups you have using this school, but things like Booster Club, FSO, those bring value to your school. They're helping to bring in funds to supplement programs in your school. I'd be a little cautious about shooting those groups in the foot. You know, they're an auxiliary of your sports department, your music department, your teachers. The FSO provides a lot of services for kids. So be careful about determining who's an outside group, who's not an outside group. I don't know if the law exactly prescribes that. I don't know. I'm asking. But just be careful about that. And maybe by extension, some coverage for those types of activities, these groups that meet on a once a month basis here but bring in thousands of dollars in program help, maybe you need to look at that. And, I mean, really, it is November, and this whole scenario could change in May. So how much do you really want to put into this whole process right now? Come up with a rate and just deal with it for the rest of the year. You know, X number of dollars per use of the school. If it's somebody who wants to host a dinner here or something, if it's an outside group that isn't part of your school community typically, then, yeah, give you an insurance certificate, and they pay X number of dollars to be here and to use the facility. It just doesn't seem as complicated as you all are making it. I must be missing something. That's it for me.
Thank you. Would anybody else like to address the board? Okay, I do need a clerk pro tem. Resolved that the Board of Education appoint Leonard, Dan, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? In your motion to go into executive session to discuss the superintendent's evaluation, motion by Richard.
Second.
Second by Dan. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? There will be no action taken after executive session.